your comment apology. And today, again, we change a bit from the format because of two important reasons. The first is that for this episode of Signal, I wanted to do something different to the three shows I did before, which are basically interviews with people somewhere in the world talking about their hackerscene, their hackerspaces. And today, we want to go a bit more in the talk radio direction. Just because we don't want to repeat ourselves. And the second reason is a new issue, which not a new issue, but it's becoming very, very current, very actual. It's WikiLeaks we want to talk about today. And therefore, I have my two partners here. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Hello, good evening.
And Phil.
Hello, good evening.
Maybe you two introduce yourself, tell the audience a bit what you're doing, where you're coming from.
Yeah, my name is Becky. Online, I'm also known as Nick Lennon. I'm a Microsoft Systems Administrator for a few companies, and also do a lot of stuff in the TOA community, online community, and civil rights increasingly more, the less.
My name is William. I'm working as a software developer for a company located in Lower Austria, and in my spare time, as you want to call it, like this, I'm also developing for a few companies located in Vienna, and I'm very interested in the actual thematics of WikiLeaks, internet security, net neutrality, and therefore I'm here, guys. Yeah, and to introduce myself, I'm Thomas, also known as Social Hacker, and I've been looking into the subject for quite some time, and read a lot in the recent days where the whole thing about WikiLeaks became global and also discussed widely in the mainstream media, and I think many of us agree that the general media discussion about this topic was quite one-sided, and today we want to try to give an introduction to the topic. We want to let the general audience from the Document Apology podcast know what WikiLeaks is, to bring them on the same state of information that probably the listeners of the Signal podcast have. And then we also want to go into a discussion about what is going on right now and what maybe the outcomes of this. So how to explain WikiLeaks in short. WikiLeaks is a project which tries to publish censored information, publish classified information, which otherwise wouldn't be available for the public. So it focuses on stuff which was not written by the person who sent it to them. It is information, usually documents, from organizations, from governments, from institutions which want to keep this information secret. That's the basic parameter upon decision whether they accept it and process it or not. This processing is a mixture of, on the one hand, validation of the document to find out if it is a correct and valid document or if it was made up. And on the other hand, they're trying to anonymize it. At the beginning, it was only to anonymize the source of the document, but right now they're also trying to anonymize the personal information of third parties which are named in the document, for example, but have no need to be there or to be exposed. Yeah, this whole leak idea is not new to the internet. You had things like that, cryptome.org is one example, which is online for many, many years before WikiLeaks. But WikiLeaks is in a way this Web 2.0 implementation of the leaking idea. And it is essential to understand that the people who provide the documents to WikiLeaks, they're called whistleblowers, because they blow the whistle. They want to draw attention to an issue which otherwise wouldn't be covered in the media. And the thing with these whistleblowers is that they're seen as a kind of checks and balance system. These are people inside an organization or a government, and they have moral issues with what's going on, and therefore they want to speak out, they want to change something in the system they are in. And the way to publish information, to let the world know what's happening, is one of the best ways to achieve that. Becky, would you add something to this description of WikiLeaks?
Well, I'd surely like to add an emphasis that WikiLeaks and the Wikipedia or the Wikimedia Foundation have nothing in common. They're two totally distinct organizations and are sadly mixed up by mainstream one-way media in the recent past. Though both insist and correctly insist on that they don't have anything to do with each other.
Mm-hmm. When did you first heard from WikiLeaks?
Oh, first encounter with WikiLeaks? 2 or 3 years ago? I think 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Probably on the Gas Communication Congress?
Can't exactly remember if it was. I surely have heard and used the website quite before 25C3 it was back then. I can't exactly remember a specific date or time frame, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they started 2006. Don't know when exactly they went online with it or when they first started to publish documents, but there definitely was time, I think, since 2009 when they released a lot of documents but weren't recognized by the media, by the general public, although they were quite known in the hacker community and those people who get their information mostly from the net and not from mainstream one-way media. There were significant documents to be named, for example, the leak they had about the Kenyan government, where the Kenyan president took a huge amount of money out of the government, and where also some Western companies were involved. This was partly front page of The Guardian, but still didn't got the attention it should have had. I mean, at the end it changed the outcome of the election in Kenya, but the general public in the West didn't recognize WikiLeaks back then. It needed much, much bigger releases, which I think started with the collateral murder video. This is the one which really drew a lot of attention. But maybe we can focus a bit more on what other leaks do you two have in mind when you think about those who are probably under the radar?
Well, many things were certainly very US-centric, US in the sense of the United States of America, but there have been leaks from all over the world, from pretty very much government or many multinational enterprises have fallen. I don't like the term victim, but certainly the biggest customer was the victim of the leak. But something that many people remember, especially in Europe, are the German toll collect contracts, which are basically the taxing system of highways for transports, which have been totally secret, though they actually are a taxing system for the public
But it was a contract between the German state and the private company, and they
several private companies actually.
But they wanted to protect it secret, although the Parliament agreed to this contract.
Yeah.
And there were several issues about it. There were commissions who could look into the document, but still it wasn't released completely. And at the end, they just published. I think nearly the whole contract.
I think a few parts I'm still missing. Well, the whole contract is about 7,000 pages long. I'm serious not that any human being could grasp the whole content within the human brain to fully understand what this contract actually means. And also the contracting parties, I thought they can fully understand what they really did there.
Which is again something interesting because it brings us to the central issue of WikiLeaks, that when you publish such a big scoop, such a tremendous amount of information, of raw information, it's very hard for the general public to make sense out of it. You need some kind of filtering, you need some kind of interpretation to be able to really have an effect with this document.
Yeah, certainly just publishing a 7,000 page contract won't give any benefit to the general public, because it's usually lawyer speak, which is not the most easy language to understand, so you definitely need some kind of preparation of the material, so the public can understand what actually happens with this contract. And they found some pretty interesting details, like the software for the toll collect system wasn't actually bought, but it's rented on a yearly basis from a small company, which certainly doesn't need any other income than that to survive the next few years without any problem.
I think WikiLeaks wasn't meant to be as an information platform for the general public. I think WikiLeaks is supposed to be a platform for interested persons, companies, which already know what information they want, and which
you could probably see WikiLeaks as a publisher only. Which, yes, publish the data, they don't give an interpretation or analysis of the data.
Mm-hmm.
They have certain rules which have to apply, so they publish this stuff, which means a leaker may leak a document that he has not written himself, because he could make up pretty much everything if he wrote the documents himself. They're checked if they're, like you already said, if they're valid documents, if they're plausible, and they're also cleaned, so they don't contain any metadata or names which might put the leaker himself at risk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much what proper journalism should actually do, protect the sources, which is something WikiLeaks does very well at the moment, and they just publish the data.
Mm-hmm.
They leave the interpretation and analysis of the published document to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. It's right what you say, and one has to point out that the record of WikiLeaks in anonymizing these documents is brilliant so far. There has been no case where the whistleblowers were identified through leaks, except the case of Bradley Manning, who was identified by a chat he had after his leaking with another hacker. And in this case, generally, I mean, when you look, for example, at some statements Julian Assange did in the documentation Wiki Rebels from the Swedish television, at the beginning of the project, they had the expectation that the general public will write collaboratively articles making sense out of these documents. This was one idea they had back then, that this interpretation should be done by the general public, and they did not even intend to connect with big media like they're doing it now, with big newspapers. But this idea just didn't work out. It didn't happen then. Some crowdsource kind of movement started to make sense out of this huge massive document. We are right now at the point where, with Operation Leaking, we have a kind of journalistic movement out of the crowd where people can specifically use WikiLeaks documents and then start writing articles about it, checking the information which is in there, and so getting a kind of system how to use this immense corpus of information. But it's surely kind of development there, how the approach to this project and this new kind of media is taking place.
Yeah, well, WikiLeaks is certainly bet on the printing business of Time Magazine. It was Time Magazine?
It was Time and
The Guardian, German Spiegel.
Yeah, you were talking now about
publishers for the print media.
Let us complete the history you are referring to right now. So, that was the story back then. And the recent developments are that the collateral murder video really got a lot of media attention. Next one was the warlocks of Iraq, I think, and after that, the warlocks of Afghanistan, which both were reports of soldiers down on the ground about their activities during this war. And they published the scope of a few years. And in this publication, at least one of these two warlocks, they made a partnership with other newspapers. At first, it was probably the New York Times, the Guardian, and the Spiegel. And actually, with the most recent leak, the leak of 250,000 diplomatic cables from the US State Department, they made a partnership also with two other newspapers. It was Le Pais from Spain and the French newspaper, I can't think of right now.
Le Monde?
Probably, yeah, Le Monde, I think. So they changed the strategy here. This, I think, was because of the problems they had to really get the stuff recognized. They did a lot of effort and really got hold of very sensitive information and processed it and put it online. But feedback was very minor. And with the last four leaks, they really got into the mainstream media and are now recognized by nearly everyone. My mother starts asking me about this WikiLeaks thing, and it becomes a topic many people want to know about. And one reason also why I do this show is because I've been following this for quite some time. And many people who I talk to are very eager to get an interpretation about it, to get more information than the mainstream media tells them. Because they have a feeling that, okay, here's something going on. This is definitely something new. And many people, I think, know that they're not told the full story. Not the truth. And therefore, the attention is the kind of thing. And when we come to the discussion of the possible outcomes of this project, I think we also have to look what the actual strategy will mean, because these 250,000 diplomatic cables are not released in the full scope. They have been given to this 5 or 6 newspapers in total. But on the internet, they only release a portion of, I think it's 4 documents per day or something like that. Or 50, I don't know, but it's
split up in parts.
Yeah, but in a way that you have quite some time till the full scope is on the net. So this leads to it's crazy when you think of that this could be a media item for the next year. Somehow could follow us to 2011.
Well, WikiLeaks has stated they have released only 0.5% of all the documents they own, so I guess WikiLeaks has the potential to give us media for the next 20 years,
if you want to. And I don't know where Wikileaks are. What's the future way where Wikileaks wants to go? Currently, it's a bit of a problem because Julian Assange, the main person, if you want to call it like this, behind Wikileaks, is under arrest. So in the next few weeks, we will see where the way of Wikileaks goes.
Mm. Yeah, Julian Assange is the spokesperson of Wikileaks. He was not the only one. There was also Daniel Schmidt, who now is, his real name is Daniel Tomchak. He left the project, I think it was about a month ago. Yeah, something like that. And Julian Assange is right now in prison in the United Kingdom. And there are sex crime claims from the Swedish side. There have been two women who convicted him of raping them. And also these claims have been not been prosecuted by the Swedish law system two times. And only in the third try, they found someone who was willing to follow this prosecution. And you could think about this case what you want, and there are definitely some facts which make one doubt if this is really what actually happened there, or if the claims that have been risen here are really based on these two women's opinion. Also because after their encounter with Julian, they bragged about this event on Twitter, and one of the women translated an English article into Swedish, which was meant to, I think it was four steps to make legal revenge on a man. And there are some suspicious things, but really Wikileaks shouldn't be about boulevard stories from one person. And although Julian Assange is, in my opinion, someone who is strongly behind Wikileaks and who is pulling many strings, the institution shouldn't rely just on one person. And this is also one interesting claim. Does such an institution need a head figure, a person which goes in front of the press and tells them what this leak means and what they have been doing and justifies the actions and gives some interpretation of the meaning of this leak? Or is it better to have just the document speaking for himself, which is the approach of the new whistleblower platform, which Daniel Domscheinberg and some other people who stepped out of Wikileaks are now building up, which is called OpenLeaks? But to the actual state of this recording, we don't have much information about it. I don't know, maybe we can discuss this issue about whether we need a head figure or not, whether it is essential to have someone who gives a press conference and is someone the media can name when they talk about Wikileaks itself or about the recent leaks, or is it better to have just a document from an anonymous sources speak out for themselves?
Well, I think like the idea of having a head person behind a company or a platform like Wikileaks, because the general public identifies the person and the platform. So in the case of Julian Assange, if Julian Assange now really has committed a crime, the Wikileaks will have to live with the effects of this. Which means some people, or let's say the general public who is not really technically interested, will start to, doubting the credibility of these documents, and which will lead to a lack of information for the general public.
Mm. This is an interesting issue. We should talk more about the credibility of these documents, and how credible the institution, the leaking platform, is itself. Because I remember back in 2009, when Daniel Domscheinberg gave a talk on another event from the case we took about the city, and then he said sometimes they had locked it. Some lawyers sent in papers that the documents which they have on their homepage is their intellectual property, and therefore they have to take it offline, which they went gracefully to have, because this confirms the validity of this document. And of course they were not putting it offline because they are based in Sweden, and also they use several law systems which have strong protection of informants, and therefore they are also legally as well as technically very bulletproof in the sense of what's online is online. You can take it off there.
It's a basic rule of the internet doesn't forget. So once it's been there for like 3 minutes, you can be sure that it stays online in whatever kind of way, but the internet doesn't forget. And I think it's quite important for a faceless organization like Wikileaks actually was intended to be, at least from the knowledge I have about Wikileaks, but you can only reach so many people with an organization that has no public figure to be identified with, and you certainly can reach an internet audience in such a way, because people who are very familiar with the workings of the internet and publishing stuff there are used to having a more or less anonymous source. They have an address where they can reach these persons, but who's really behind that is not really important. If the information is good, then the source will be credited for it and will be contacted again for more information. The problem is a kind of visual divide between mainstream media or old media, like print, press, news magazines, TV, radio stations. They reach a different audience than the internet does. And I guess there's a big gap between those two kinds of media, which are the old media and the so-called new media, which are like 30 years old now, I guess, also. So to reach mainstream one-way media, you need a public figure, a PR person, a spokesperson. Like, Kiosk, we also have a spokesperson. They need it to reach, like, TV stations. You can't have a press conference with a website, or a platform, or the internet. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And like a TV station or radio station would like to have an interview, or like a so-called Uton, a few sentences from a person.
A testimonial, yes.
Testimonial, yeah, something like that. You can't get that from a website. You need a PR person, a human being who can fill that role as a bridge, as a contact between the different kinds of media.
Mm. But it's interesting where this idea comes from, because I'm not convinced that this is something which is intrinsically with this old media stuff called connected. I mean, you started to... I have no knowledge of this thing, but I think it's quite realistic to say that it helps if you have, for example, a very popular actor, a very charming head for delivering very bad information about a company. You could compensate the message with the messenger. In the internet, usually, as you know, 30 years, it's not that long for usual decades, but in internet decades, it was a huge amount of time where different kind of culture developed and evolved, and we are more used to having only text-based communication, and that the other person on the other end of the line is some kind of character, but maybe not the one who is physically on the other end of the line. And we again have here a kind of clash between these two approaches and how to deliver, and how to deliver information, and how to count or value the credibility of information. For example, a classical magazine journalist can't make a story, he can sell a story without having a name and a photo of a hat for it. They need to have this kind of personal connection with information. It would be a more usual way of them for them to deliver the stuff. And there have been other approaches. For example, Anonymous is one thing we have to name here, which is an organization completely without a face. But it's also explained with this idea when you look at the image of Anonymous. And there have been also funny ideas. For example, if you really need someone who delivers their message on a news conference, then you only make a projection of a digital character, like the gorillas, you know? You really invent some figure which then stands in front of the media and speaks out to them. Which would be very funny when they then try to put this person, yeah, in jail.
Actually, the Anonymous... Can see organization?
Movement, phenomenon, yeah. I don't know.
It's certainly fact that Anonymous exists, but they actually play a little with this, having a face to associate with Anonymous. And in fact, Anonymous has the face, but this face is actually a mask. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly recognizable as an anonymizing mask to maybe protect the actual faces behind this.
They use the mask of the film V, like Vendetta.
Yeah. They give it the face, even if it's clearly not a real a human face. But they give it the face to be associated with Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And you recognize the face, and you see it again, and say, oh, that is Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. I would like to make a connection here to something that maybe no other connection has been made before. This reminds me of the student protest which we had here in Vienna recently. Because this was also a kind of organization which refused to have a spokesperson, which refused to have a hat figure which would speak for this group of students who were demonstrating there and occupied the main lecture hall in Vienna for quite some time. And although at the end this movement spread, and here in Vienna then before Christmas 2009 the whole thing died, you had a movement which was very digital in its nature. It used live stream and Twitter communication and blogs for the discussion of the issues. And at the end they failed, but this was also due to the political system and also the general political situation when it comes to education. Maybe we're seeing here the uprise of a new kind of movement which no longer works with classical PR concepts and which no longer needs a key figure. I mean, Julian Assange right now is something where many people are making him a hero, many people stigmatize him either to the killer of young soldiers or the enlightened figure which brings us all the truth or at least fights our corrupt governments. I think both are wrong. I think he is someone with intentions, someone who started something which was about time. Which is also not new. There has been other leaking platforms in the internet for many years before WikiLeaks, Krypton.org, for example. But Assange made it that these things got mainstream. And I like to compare him to the function of an editor who decides which leaks are taken from this huge mass, this huge body of things you could choose off, and then putting them either in classical mainstream media or just releasing them purely online. And I think this was also the basic issue where people from WikiLeaks organization stepped out because they were not happy with his decisions here to put all resources on this for recent leaks, which were usually good for the PR value of WikiLeaks, but we don't know which other documents would have been there, which we haven't seen so far. What were the other things that Julian decided not to publish on? Maybe, hopefully, we see them. Hopefully, OpenLeaks will be a way where we can get our hands on this information and process it.
I really think it's Mr. Assange's personal belief to publish truth to the general public, that there is a certain threshold of global recognizable ethics. But people who see incorrect things in a company or within a government, who have access to documents and no longer can stand having to keep a secret about things that should be known to the public. I think it's very important to have a platform for these people, these often called whistleblowers.
Yeah, you're right. The basic treatment of WikiLeaks is to give these people a possibility to do something with their morality, to be able to publish information and to know that you take a risk here, but this organization you're giving these documents to will do everything they can to anonymize it and to keep you as safe. And at the end, hopefully, we will see more organizations like this. I mean, there is definitely a need for this. You can see it just by the pure numbers of documents which WikiLeaks claims to have. And I hope that we will see this as a continuous force. And there was a very good article in The Guardian about it, that the system of WikiLeaks will not go away. The cat is outside of the sack, we say. And now politicians can either live with a WikiLeakable world, or they have to shut the internet down. It's the only decision they have. Because these things will be known. And also, Assange said this in an interview once, that people have to live with the fact that if they're doing something which goes against the general public and they want to keep it secret, these things will be known and they will be held accountable for it. And just this fact gives me hope that this could be a real force in the world. But on the other hand, when I look at how totalitarian systems react usually when they fear that their power could come to an end, it's like animals which are hurt. They fight even more, they get even more brutal and crucial. And maybe we can discuss this, maybe we can think of the measurements which politicians will take to restore the sphere of secrecy around the power of governments again. Because I think we will see definitely some new laws making, for example, ISPs accountable for the information which goes through the pipes. or that you are accountable for the links you set on your homepage?
Well, this already was in Germany, but even this kind of nonsense, like disallowing links to certain content, and there is already a motion in new legislation to provide laws that make stuff that is uncomfortable to the government illegal. And the problem is the internet has been designed not to be shut off. It's said that the internet interprets censorship as damage and will find a way around that. And I think that's quite an important point in the internet as a communication medium for the peoples of this earth. But they still have a way to communicate and to easily publish information and spread information, which is not wanted by governments, and increasingly they try to censor this way of publishing information, to restrict it, but they cannot cope with the kind of ways the internet works and spreading of information works there, because laws cannot cover technical advantages, they cannot cover every aspect, and even if spreading information is illegal, it does not mean that it's technically impossible to spread this information, and this is a factor they cannot work with.
In a way, you're right, but I think it's, again, black and white in this case. Because the difficulty cannot completely make it impossible for disinformation to spread, because information in its nature is like water, it's liquid. It goes through the gaps, through the tiny things, and tries to spread. But what they can do is increase the cost of having access to this information. They can make it harder and harder for people to be anonymous on the net, to publish on the net, and also to increase the cost of discussion. In the sense that you could make laws that people are benchmarked through the way they are communicating on the internet. And you could have certain economical balance systems to value this kind of activity. And these would all be measurements which would, of course, produce counter-measurements, would produce counter-culture. But in this fight we already are. In this fight we already are since 5 or 10 years, or at least in the hacker scene, since this movement starts to be politically active, you can see that they are working against this increasement of costs. And, for example, the most historical thing was the case of people fighting against German Post, against for the right to have modems and for the right to use them for data purposes lines of the telecommunication companies. And in larger sense, when we see the facts from a sociological side, then we will have a digital divide. In another sense, not only those who have access to computer systems and the internet and those who have not, it will be seen as the gap between people who have the skills to use the internet anonymously and to browse the web completely, and not only those restricted parts which usually governments want people to see. And this will be very dangerous in a society perspective, because we're living in a democracy, and it should be the role of media at the end to engage in this spreading of information, to value the things. You can see this in Germany right now, that they are discussing laws against newspapers who, for example, say this would be a good terroristic attack, and here we have feared that something might happen. So this kind of pre-crime claim against media is something really dangerous, because here freedom of speech and freedom of press and the right to have anonymous informants is really under attack.
Yes, this is the government's take on shutting down this information. At least they're trying to shut down this information. They maybe can censor a TV station or 100 radio stations or newspapers. They can't censor the whole population of the country or of whole Europe or the United States. It's one government against 300 million people. I'm quite certain that it maybe will take a few years, but those 300 million people will win any fight.
I doubt that it's really 300 million, though. But it is a fact that we see this division between the internet versus the state, the internet versus the government. And all these things are not new for people who engage in the hacker scene, but now they are mainstream. Now they are things that are discussed in the general public.
But like you said, the divide will be between those who have the skills to use certain technical stuff and those who will not be able to use it. But it's an intrinsic component of technical devices or software, that it's becoming cheaper, that it's becoming easier to use, that the first ones who discover a new way to transport information will, after they have established a first working prototype that is maybe hard to use but achieves this goal, they will start working on making it easier to use, making it available to more people, to a broader audience. And maybe in the 70s it was quite esoteric to use an email, and it was quite complex. And today, like, every 5 year old can write an email.
Yeah, and maybe we will soon see implementations of WikiLeaks where, I don't know, you can order the WikiLeaks newsletter and it's brought to you by paper or couriers, things like that. But maybe a conversion of media and even more ways how to spread this information. I could think of the need to go wider in the sense that all the mirrors of WikiLeaks right now are quite essential to have this information not only on one server and not only reachable under one address. Instead, you have hundreds, you have thousands of addresses and servers where this information is hosted, and you can use this as a way of making sure that it will stay online. And one can only encourage people to make mirrors of WikiLeaks. And I think also that you did the project there, which you should name here, I think, just to...
Yeah, it's like you said, the censoring party would like to try to increase the cost of communication, like to shut down the publishing service where the general public can access the information that the government doesn't want to be read by them. And it's quite, everywhere we've seen with Amazon and PayPal, it's surprisingly easy for the US government to shut down a hosting company or tell them to just shut down the service for one customer. It basically took them one call and say, this is illegal, turn it off, and they did, without questioning if it really was illegal or what was happening there.
Yeah,
so there's already immense pressure on these companies hosting the websites. And you really can't turn on a company like Amazon or PayPal. But the internet has interpreted this as a censorship, and it works around it. It's a damage, because the service is not reachable anymore. It will find a way around that. And it's also a cultural thing that information wants to spread and needs to be spread by big people. So there was the community effort of mirroring the website, and now they have to deal with not one server and one domain, but like 1,500 servers now, spread all over the world. And it's not as easy as shutting down one domain. information available even better. And it will continue this mirroring project, and I have prepared a simple virtual machine that is a pre-configured WikiLeaks mirror that you can set up really easily, and I'm still hoping for a few people to help you with the final setup, so you can have like a 5-minute setup for a working WikiLeaks webpage mirror.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested, I'm
at McLennan
on Twitter. Contact me.
Mm-hmm. I think what you said in the pre-show was that you would specifically need people who make penetration testing on this virtual machine, which may trigger some of our audience.
Not actually really penetration testing, it's not about IPsec or infosec in this case, but I think it's only responsible to have peer review of the server configuration, especially since this is a Ubuntu server, which I'm not that familiar with, and before publishing a server setup to probably, hopefully, thousands of users, I actually like to have that checked by people who are probably more familiar with this kind of setup, so I try to be responsible by having other people look at my work, mm-hmm. which is actually nothing special. Everybody could have done it, but as far as I know, nobody has. Until now, at least I have heard of it, and I'm sure there are many people who can do a better job than me, but mm-hmm. I've done some initial trigger and hope to get a few people to improve on what I've built,
mm-hmm.
and kind of and lower the threshold for putting up another WikiLeaks mirror, so we can have many more of them.
Yeah, I like the project because, as you said, it lowers the threshold. It makes it easier for people to participate and to really do something actively in this case. The most essential thing one could do in this case, from my opinion, is to inform oneself, to really read the news from various sources about this case, and also to read this WikiLeaks data. As we said, it's probably such a huge corpus of information that it's very hard to get at least one fragment out of it, really, to have an opinion about it, but maybe you have an issue where you see yourself as an expert. And then you could really grab through the data and only look at this one aspect where you already know a lot about, and take this as your participation, because you will, when you then write articles about this, you will be one part of this project, and you will, for example, in OperationLeaksGen.org, they're trying to give a framework for people who want to look at the raw material of WikiLeaks, in this case only the diplomatic cables, but the world extended out, and really make sense of this huge mass of information. You will probably never have again the possibility to look so deep into this kind of information if you're not part of the government, and you will no longer have the possibility to interpret this new approach to the media. And yeah, we don't know if we will have this possibility again in another 5 years or another 10 years. The future nobody can tell us, but we are definitely not on the way where we have nothing to worry about.
I think the idea of Operation Big Spin is very good, because it doesn't do any damage, but encourages people to actually look at the published documents that are there, and if you don't know which ones to look at, you can sort them by country they are related to, and if you need a kind of personal connection with the documents so that you think, this is maybe not important for me, what happened between the United States and some other country, but it might affect you if it's between the United States and your own country. So you can have a specific look and search if there are tables that are in relation to the country you live in. There's even, for a small country, Austria, there's tables.
Yeah.
And so you might get a sense of why this is important for everybody, because pretty much everybody's affected by this stuff.
Mm. There's more to come. Julian Assange did an interview with the Forbes magazine, and there he said that the new leak should be about banking systems, and especially the inner principles and the workings of banking systems, how they are the strategy, how they value things, and as far as I would judge Assange, this is something which will interest us. And there have been cases like that. For example, one thing we haven't mentioned before, the case of the Icelandic leak they had. For those who don't know, the Icelandic banking system collapsed and lost, I think, more than half of its mass, of the amount of money which was in the country. And therefore, the whole system collapsed, and they had people on the streets and riots. And WikiLeaks published internal information from the two biggest Icelandic banks on what happened in these days of the crisis, and how they lied about certain things, how they moved money out of the country, and even provoked this collapse, which then happened. This, at the end, led to the new Icelandic media laws, which are one of the most modern and liberal ones in the whole world, because they have the freedom of information and also the certain different approaches to copyright at the heart of these new laws, which make Iceland the offshore for information, the offshore for server housing, in the sense like Switzerland is the offshore for the finance system, where you can do nearly everything and where you can hide nearly everything, the same concept the WikiLeaks people wanted to implement in Iceland, and they did. We will definitely include a huge link list to this episode to connect to English and German-speaking information if you want to get closer into it, and also especially the documentation with WikiLeaks. And, yeah.
I think the announced upcoming leaking of banking system, and I think it's also in regard to specific banking in the United States, was announced. So, with retrospect to the bailouting of banks and the crazy, really crazy stuff that happened there, it will be very interesting to get an insight on what works there behind the scenes have happened, and until the leak is actually published, and I'm quite sure that the mainstream media will pick up that one, because
mm-hmm.
They won't take care of our planet, but it's about a bank. Every government and every large company goes there, oh, we need to somehow cover this up and make it work again.
It will be very interesting when you see the public opinion go around. Again, now it's everything against WikiLeaks in the United States, and then when they start to publish information about this banking crisis, and maybe the next one about China or Pakistan or whatever, you will see the opinion turn around, I think. But if I would have to guess today what this banking leak will be, I would think that it's probably some kind of strategy paper, which just clearly means that they want to be bailed out, they want to have this money from the government, and also the plans for after the bailouts, how to get away from the influence of the state, how they later want to influence legislation, that the money they got from the government system is not, again, taken from them, instead taken from healthcare systems or education systems like we have here in Europe, for example, that all those things will just be named clearly in those documents. You're not new. Everyone could think about this, and you have these articles already in many newspapers. But it's this essential phase of plausible deniability of these things that you can no longer tell you're a liar because you are speaking like this. It's usually today you see yourself in the corner with the conspiracy people when you name those things, and then you will have them black and white and for everyone publicly available. Isn't that nice?
Many people have some kind of theoretical knowledge, but they suspect there's something wrong with the banking system, and there clearly is something wrong, but it's hard to name what exactly it is that is wrong with it. Except the whole concept is broken, inherently broken, because a lot of markets are purely virtual, and trading goods that actually don't exist on Earth, but are traded, and we make really spendable money out of virtual goods that don't exist and that have never been shipped to a buyer from a seller. So it will be interesting how this affects public opinion on the banking system, on the innards of governments and large corporations that clearly try to affect how laws are made or made up in favor of their businesses. So we don't know yet which bank actually is affected or is clearly targeted by the leaks. We'll see. This will be very interesting.
I would also like to see a leak which speaks out about the, which you just explained, the fundamental workings of the finance system, that also inside those neoliberal institutions, the fundamental basics upon this system works are doubted, that not even they themselves believe the way the system is run right now, which again hopefully could change something or make the unavoidable change in the system happen even faster. This could only be for our good and freedom of information again here, which I hope will save us all. Good, then I think that's about it for today, and if you have any comments, as usual, I encourage you to send me a line, use the comment function, send me an email on thomas@talkmentapology.com or thomas@socialhack.eu. We will provide quite extensive link list for today's show, and I hope that there was something for you, and I also want to thank you, Florian and Peppy, for joining me, and it's best to say goodbye on the base of good outlooks, and hopefully this project will give us all a bit better and more free society for the next decade to come. Thank you.